Welcome back to the Disciple Makers podcast. Today we are joined by Jillian Watkins and we'll be talking about mental health. We had a great conversation ranging from topics like mental health in the Bible, growing and assessing our emotions, and self-care. We also touched on particular applications for the coronavirus season we find ourselves in. Before we jump into the episode, we wanted to remind you about the Summer Discipleship Challenge if you are a Disciple Maker student, and we wanted to share a promo for that with you. Life is typically crazy busy. Our calendars are bursting with events. In March, everything changed. In-person classes were canceled, focus was canceled, family vacations and missions trips have been canceled, sports and concerts have been canceled. But the mission of Jesus Christ is not canceled. Jesus declares in Matthew 9:37 that the harvest is plentiful even now, that the resource that is in short supply isn't time or money or buildings. The resource Jesus says we need is more laborers. So join us this summer to be trained as a laborer. We invite you to gather with other college students for a 9-week online course on discipleship and life essentials. It's called the Summer Discipleship Challenge. Visit dm.org/summer to sign up today. All right, so now that that's out of the way, please join us as we discuss mental health with Jillian on the Disciple Makers podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Caleb Olszewski, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Evans.
Hello.
Today, our guest is Jillian Watkins. We, of course, had her husband, Clint, on a few episodes ago, so we're excited to have her on as well. So welcome, Jillian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we are talking about mental health on this episode. Huge issue, super important for us, especially in this season at home where we're really isolated. So we're really eager to talk about this and hopefully provide some great resources for you guys and some information as we go through. But to start here, Jillian, would you be able to just share what your experience has been working in the area of mental health and kind of telling us, why'd we have you on today? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So would you be willing to share that?
Sure, of course. So my time in the mental health field unofficially kind of started when I finished up undergrad. I studied social work and I was working in a homeless shelter, working with clients who were staying there at that time. And I just started to notice a lot of dynamics that were kind of making it so that these people were having to experience homelessness, some of them being addiction, some of them being mental health, often both even. And it was kind of one of those classic times where I started to realize how much I really didn't know. You graduate from college and then you get working and you realize like, this was helpful, but there's still so much more to learn. And that just really started getting me interested in learning more about mental health and how that impacts really all of us in different ways. So I studied, got my master's in social work, and then was working with high schoolers actually providing mental health services at a local high school near where I live. And then did that for a bit and then helped to run that program as well. And so I'm still learning a lot, but yeah, really enjoying it.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Jillian. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could start with just a basic definition. What is mental health? I'm sure when people say that word, we might even have different things that come to mind. So how would you define mental health? What is it?
Yeah, it's a good question. Generally, we would think of it as referring to people's cognitive, emotional, and behavioral well-being. So our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors, our actions. And so we would think of someone with good mental health as having the ability to feel what they need to feel and manage those and express those feelings, both the positive and the negative, to tolerate and manage distress, because of course we're all going to encounter stressful situations in our lives, to be able to form relationships with people, interact with others. So those are all signs of good mental health. And sometimes those things are compromised, right? They're not working quite the way that they should be. And so when you start to think about those areas not working the way they should be, that is when we might get into the range of mental health concerns and struggles, you might say, where they kind of pop up maybe at different times in our lives, all the way to even chronic mental health concerns that are more persistent, more long-lasting, can be treated and helped, but you know, significantly impact someone's ability to do all of those things that I just listed. So I like to think of it as the need for us is the need to take care of our mental health is there for all of us, right? So just like we would take care of something physically, if it was causing us pain, not working right, making it hard for us to get through our day-to-day activities, we would be inclined to seek treatment and get help. And so that's also true of our mental health. It's not as tangible or as visible, but it is part of being human, and we need to care for that as well.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, that this isn't a niche area that you maybe need to think about sometimes in your life, which I think growing up for me, I think when I thought of the topic of mental health, I'm thinking, oh, this is people that need to be in a mental hospital. And that's like the area that goes to kind of some of those mm-hmm. extreme cases, that more of what you're talking about, even in just like the prolonged experiences of, you know, even more severe mental illness and that sort of thing, versus what we're talking about in mental health is, yeah, these are things that everybody can experience at any point in their lives. And so we want to address that more holistically. Mm-hmm. One question that we got on Instagram from, I think this is Emily Yo, but she asked us, what does the Bible say about mental health? And maybe even more specifically, you know, were there people in the Bible that experienced mental health? Or, you know, is that something that the Bible even touches on?
Mm-hmm. It's a really, really good question. I'm glad she asked it, because I think sometimes there can be a tendency to separate these two topics, and you can mm-hmm. either focus purely on the psychology side of things, where we're thinking through what we can learn through science and therapy and treatment and research and practice. And those are all really good things. And so you can focus just there, or you can focus just spiritually and view it as a matter of faith and prayer. And I think rather it's helpful to have a really holistic approach, like you were just mentioning. I think of it as us being biopsychosocial spiritual beings, right? So we have all these spheres that impact who we are and what makes us who we are. And I think you see that throughout the scriptures. So if you're looking for like a word search of mental health, you're not going to necessarily find that exactly in the Bible, but you see pieces of mental health throughout, especially two places I was thinking about. One is just Jesus's holistic ministry model. So in Matthew in chapter 4, it talks about Jesus going throughout all of Galilee, teaching in the synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and affliction among the people. And so I think that right there shows that he's concerned, of course, about people's spiritual well-being, but there's also the biopsychosocial part of people as well that he's concerned for and that he's really addressing. I think you see that as well in his interactions with the women in John 4 and John 8, where these two women are in different situations where they're separated from their community. They're dealing with shameful situations. And Jesus is just coming in really compassionately and really addressing the whole picture. So I think one place we can see it is just in Jesus's ministry, that he cares about the whole person. And then another place I was thinking about was actually just all the way back in Genesis in the creation account, where you have chapter 1 and 2, where everything is getting started, and it ends verse 25 says, they were both naked and were not ashamed. And so right at the beginning, we see this picture of an emphasis on their full well-being. They're taken care of physically, spiritually, relationally, and psychologically. They're not feeling shame, which is a really good thing because shame is a really powerful emotion. And then right away in chapter 3, in verse 7, it starts, so this is after the fall, then the eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. They sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loincloths, and they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord among the trees of the garden. But the Lord God said, "Where are you?" And the man said, "I heard the sound of you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." And so I just think, like, in just a matter of a few verses, you see this flip then where they're feeling that exposure. They're understanding their vulnerability. They feel the need to cover, to hide. They're afraid. And so things start to then break down relationally, psychologically. So I think that's another place where you might not see the word mental health, but you're seeing its impact and its effects play out.
Yeah. I love what you're saying. Even from Genesis to Jesus, we do see all sorts of people in the Bible struggling in the realm of mental health, in their thoughts and their emotions and their feelings. Over winter break, a lot of our Disciple Makers staff teams did some mental health training, particularly around depression, anxiety, even suicidality. Then the one activity that really stuck with me is the facilitator had put around the room on paper, you know, depression, anxiety, you know, et cetera. And we would read these verses and you were supposed to go stand next to which one you thought the person was experiencing. And that was very eye-opening to me. I never realized how many people in the scripture experience depression and anxiety. A few that really stuck out to me are Elijah in 1 Kings 19, that he's in a very stressful and exhausted situation, and he goes and he's sleeping for days. He doesn't have any motivation to get up. He actually says to the Lord twice, "It is enough now, Lord, take away my life. I'm no better than my father's." And so you see that he is in a severe depressive state. You know, it doesn't say, "And Elijah was depressed," mm-hmm. but you can see that's really where he's at. Now, and he's a powerful prophet, man of God. Even Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, it says that as he's praying, he's deeply distressed, that even his sweat is turning to blood. Like, that is how anxiety can manifest even physically. Like, that is how difficult that experience was for him. And I think that was just very helpful to see all the places in scripture, men and women, high and low, experiencing depression, anxiety, even suicidality, just how mm-hmm. common it was. And the purpose of the exercise was for us to really see most people feel something like this at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. And so if you're feeling these things, you're not weaker. Right. You're not
alone.
You're not odd. You're actually very common. Mm-hmm. And that was just very helpful for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is true. It's not silent on those topics, which I think we can think that maybe it is. But as you read through the whole story of the Bible, you see all of those things that you just mentioned. Yeah, it's really true.
So as we start diving in more to this topic of mental health and actually working it through and what it looks like to be mentally healthy, a huge part of this is obviously our emotions, how we process them, that sort of a thing, and where mm-hmm. maybe the way we're processing them is out of whack. But as we jump into that, this may sound simple, but what are emotions? How do we define emotions to begin with?
Mm-hmm. It's actually not simple. It's a really complex question, so it's a really good question.
Well, great.
Yeah. So in general, there is some really good understanding that people have come to over the years, which I'll get into a bit, but also it's an evolving field, right? So there's always more research to be done, more complexities to understand. We're just very complex people. And so defining our emotions and how they impact us is really hard. But in general, the field of psychology does give some, I think, some helpful language around it. So we usually think of emotion as this complex psychological state that has kind of three distinct parts to it. So the first part is like a subjective experience, right? So it's some sort of event or some sort of stimulus that we're experiencing. And we all experience that in different ways, hence the subjective part. So like an example could be maybe like freshman move-in day or your first day of classes on campus. So that's the event. We're all experiencing it, but we're experiencing it in different ways. Then there's the physiological response, so your biological response. And it's involuntary. It's physical in nature, related to different parts of our bodily systems that are working. And so some people on freshman move-in day might be super excited and ready to be there.
Right.
Some might be really nervous. Some might be ambivalent. They're not nervous or excited, and anywhere in between. And that can create some of those biological responses. So your heart might be racing a bit more because you're nervous. You might have some racing thoughts just because there's a lot going on that day. So that's kind of that piece of the puzzle. And then last is the one we're most familiar with, which is like your behavior or your expressive response of the emotion. So it's actually expressing it. So some people might be really outgoing on that first day and you know, eager to talk to people. You might be feeling anxious and nervous and a bit shy. And so maybe the way you express that is just being quiet and reserved the first few days on campus. So that's a little bit of a way we can think of emotions and how they just kind of how they play out. But it is really complex. And just a complicated process to understand.
Yeah. What are some of the different common ways that we respond to our emotions that are maybe unhelpful or helpful? Just what are some different ways we respond?
Mm-hmm. So I think there can be lots of ways, but generally in two categories I would put it is that your emotions can either rule you or you can reject them. So if they're ruling you, that is a bit more when you fall into the thinking of, that emotions are everything, that they dictate your decisions, that you should do what feels right for you and kind of not consider anything else. And then the other end of the spectrum is the opposite. So it's rejecting them entirely. So maybe we're feeling skeptical of them, irrational of them. Maybe we just don't like spending the time thinking about them and working through what we're feeling. Maybe we're not even aware of it. We're not consciously choosing to reject it, but we're just not aware of what's going on. And so we don't actually take in the information that our emotions are giving us. And instead we rely on other things to make our decisions. So I think those are some of the extremes.
Yeah. So as we start to think about where's the middle ground, you know, like we don't necessarily want to fall off on one side of the horse or the other, but where does the Bible call us in the middle there with our emotions mm-hmm. and responding to them?
Yeah. So I think that is kind of where we want to land is figuring out how can I use this in a helpful way? So our emotions really give us important data points, important information to understand kind of where we're at internally. And there's some main categories of those emotions. I would put it in these five. So mad, sad, glad, afraid, ashamed. And so sometimes it can just be helpful to even run through those. If you're having a particularly stressful day, maybe you had a really difficult conversation with someone, just to think through, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how mad, sad, glad, afraid, or ashamed am I feeling in this situation right now. And that can just be really helpful. So I think we want to find that balance. And I think you see that throughout the scriptures. So some different examples, I would start with, again, Jesus. So you see that he has lots of different experiences and emotion throughout his ministry. And even before that, so in Isaiah, he's described as a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. In Mark 3, he's trying to heal someone, and the people are, he says that their hearts are hardened because they don't actually want him to heal the person. They want to kind of trap him in doing it on the Sabbath. And so when he looks around at the people, it says he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. So you see that Jesus is sometimes righteously angry. You see joy in Luke 10. It says he rejoices in the Spirit at the Father's will. This is a common one in John 11. Jesus is deeply moved and saddened and greatly troubled over Mary weeping, the Jews weeping, and the death of Lazarus. And you also see, I think, compassion from him in general. So he has compassion, it says, often throughout his ministry on the crowds, the physically sick, the poor and oppressed. So I think that, you know, if we're looking for places in scripture where it just talks about emotions, you can start with Jesus and maybe even think about that as you're reading through the Gospels, looking for the different places where his emotions are brought up. And then some other places, I think you see it in the Psalms and also in Paul's ministry. So in the Psalms, and maybe Clint talked about this a bit in the lament episode, but the authors are just really honest in acknowledging their emotions to the Lord, and they're doing something productive with it. So they're expressing them, and they're also inviting others in, because these were corporate songs often. And so you see, I know that he probably said this, pain, protest, petition, and praise. So you see this whole range of how people are interacting with the Lord. And then also in Paul's ministry, I think you just see it as well. So he's thankful for that the Lord has shown mercy on him and kept him from sorrow upon sorrow. That's in Philippians 2. He has we don't know exactly what it is, but in 2 Corinthians, he talks about a thorn in his flesh. He pleads for it to be taken away. So I just think there's a whole range throughout the scriptures of where you do see emotions come up, and it's not something to be dismissed or put aside or rule you, but really to be used in a wise way.
Yeah, one of the most helpful metaphors that I was ever told was that your emotions are like the indicator lights on your dashboard of your car, mm-hmm. where they're not the steering wheel, you know, and so they're not driving, they're not controlling where you're going. And yet, when that indicator light comes on, when that check engine light comes on, if you ignore that, you're going to blow up your car, probably. And you're going to be like, why'd that happen? Well, you should have paid attention to the indicator. So I like what you said earlier, that the emotions are data points, and that we take those data points and then we sort of think about, why is that happening? What's making me feel that way? Is that like a very valid thing? Is this maybe, or is it maybe a different perception? And I think you see that excellently in the Psalms, that they often start with things like, why are you cast down, my soul, or things like that. And they'll sort of bring up, these are the things I'm feeling. But then they'll also remind themselves, okay, you know, here's the legitimate reasons why I'm feeling that. You know, a lot of the Psalms of David, somebody's trying to kill me. But then also, what are the promises of God? How can I process that? And so I love that you see, you know, David, on the one hand, he's like this beast mode soldier, but mm-hmm. also he plays a harp and sings about his feelings. Right. And I love that. Like there's yeah. not much fragile masculinity with David, and I really appreciate that. And so I love that this is not, I think we can make a lot of stereotypes about like, oh, singing about our feelings and what that looks mm-hmm. like. But I think you see like, no, this is actually a very healthy thing to be aware of what you're feeling and why you're feeling it. But then what do we know of the Lord? What is true mm-hmm. of our situation? And so even sort of taking the scriptures as our example, how can we grow in being self-aware about our emotions and our thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I agree with what you're saying. It's, that's a really good illustration, the indicator light. You know, it's a red flag of being aware. And I think it's important because I'm sure we can all think of a time in our lives where, you know, we've been going at a pace for too fast, for too long, with whether it's work or school or whatever it is, and you hit a wall. And whatever that wall looks like, whether it's physical exhaustion or emotional burnout or your relationships are getting strained. And I always think about it as, wouldn't it be nice to know that that wall is there and that you're approaching it before you hit it? Our emotions are there to help us find those indicators and to have the ability to see the wall, see that I'm coming at it, and slow down my pace before I hit it. Just as another way to think about it. And so it's really important that we know what our emotions are and what they're telling us. In terms of just self-awareness, I think it's helpful to take the time to monitor, like you were saying, Sarah, what are those thoughts, emotions we're having, and how are they impacting our actions? Because they certainly will. And just being able to name what they are. I think giving language to things is really important and really helpful. It can feel very lonely and difficult when you are, you know, maybe feeling depressed or anxious or irritated, agitated, frustrated, lonely. But maybe you're having a hard time putting it into words and explaining it to yourself, let alone the people around you. So just taking time to really engage with that, think through it, and name what we're experiencing can be really, really helpful and beneficial.
So maybe even just during this season of coronavirus and even a lot of feelings around loss or isolation or whatnot, how can we grow in being self-aware of that? What are some things we can do in caring for our mental health during this time?
Yeah, I think just in terms of being self-aware during this time, maybe I can give you some categories to think through, some things that I would imagine are really common right now for people to be experiencing. And one of those, I think, would be the experience of loss, which often produces grief. So loss, we typically think of as the event, so the person or the thing that we have lost. Grief is our response to it, so all the emotions that come along with that, and mourning is usually what we do. And so right now there's an abundance of loss for people to be walking through, and lots of categories and layers to that. So there might be some of the kind of the large scale collective loss where we're all feeling the weight of the sickness and the death among us, and that can feel far away or it can hit close to home depending on your situation. And so that's a heavy weight and a burden that we're all carrying collectively, which is very unique. Sometimes that happens in situations of like natural disasters where a whole community is affected. Right now we're experiencing it globally. And that's new and that's different. I think other layers are some of those important like milestones and rituals that we're missing. So of course for students, end of the year celebrations, graduation is huge. You are missing something that you're not going to get back in the same way or maybe ever. And that's really hard. Weddings, funerals, all these rituals that are built into our life, celebrations are missing. And that's important to recognize and name it. And then there's just the loss of everyday life and freedom where we could kind of come and go as we please, make plans as we please, see our friends for dinner, go to the gym, just things that are really enjoyable and helpful and life-giving to us are feeling very restricted and limited. And that's hard as well. And then there's also just the psychological layer of loss to consider where we have lost a sense of security, a sense of routine and predictability, financial security as maybe a lot of students' families are going through hard times financially, losing jobs or businesses, and there's just a lot of uncertainty that comes with that. So we can be attached to a lot of things, like these celebrations, our everyday life, a sense of security, and people. Obviously, losing people is the most painful and devastating, but we do have other things that we can lose as well. So I think it's just helpful to recognize that and to be able to put words to that. And maybe you can just think through on your own, kind of for you, what are you losing as a result of this pandemic and what that means for you? Maybe making a list of it just so that you're aware of those losses. And then also considering as you look at that list you've made, what emotions does that stir up for you? And how do the scriptures speak to those emotions? That can be really helpful. As well as considering even just, although we've never gone through this particular situation before, I'm certain there have been other times in people's lives where they've experienced distress. So even thinking through how has the Lord worked in the past? What have they seen then? How have they seen resiliency in themselves and their families? And how can they even incorporate some of those things now? Can be really helpful as well. So I think that's one category, is just like loss and grief that we can be more aware of right now.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think there's so much kind of loss and grief going on. Another thing I've heard a lot about from students, even, you know, mm-hmm. just in myself, is just fear and anxiety. How do we think about those things, mm-hmm. both scientifically, scripturally, you know, et cetera, fear and anxiety? Yeah.
That's a good question. I think it can be a little tricky at first to think through because you do, I think sometimes there can be questions of like, is worrying a sin? Is anxiety a sin? Is it wrong to be fearful? And I think there's a couple of places, and Sarah, you might have some too, but I was thinking just to kind of frame this, and then we can talk a little bit more about what anxiety and fear looks like. But in Luke 12, verse 32, it says, do not be afraid, little flock. So Jesus is talking, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. And this like little phrase, like little flock, there's just like a lot of tenderness there. He's not guilting them, shaming them for being afraid. He's just approaching them very gently. And then in 1 Thessalonians as well, when it's talking about how to respond to people who are going through different things or in different categories, the kind of the command is to encourage the faint-hearted and help the weak. So I think you get a picture in scriptures of the Lord and Jesus. They recognize that fear and anxiety are normal human emotions that we're going to experience in different situations. And so we're not shamed for feeling those things, but we're given a lot of compassion and grace. Hopefully that's helpful in framing it a little bit. Good.
Yeah, that is helpful. Yeah, I read a lot from the Christian Counseling Educational Foundation, which is CCEF, and I think they have a lot of great articles and videos, but they just had one yesterday as part of a special coronavirus series that they've put out, and it's entitled Fear Is Not Sin.
Oh,
and it's actually it's a really good article. We'll put it in the link to it in the show notes. And one of the things that the author is talking about is he's saying, you know, do not fear is the most frequent command in scripture. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying often people will use that to say that, well, like being fearful must be sinful. But then he just goes through and he walks through a lot of those commands, how sometimes a command can be kind of an exhortation and an encouragement, you know, and he gives different examples about how often when you look at the context of these passages, there's do not fear, you know, like mm-hmm. if any of you have any small children in your lives, whether they're siblings, nieces, nephews, you know, if they get afraid of something, you might see a parent say, do not fear, it's okay. You know, and you know, they're not saying like, stop being afraid, kid. You know, mm-hmm. you know, like you wouldn't say that to a child. And that often the part that we miss in the do not fear in scripture is almost always it's coupled with, for I am with you, says the mm-hmm. Lord. You know, even an example I think we think about a lot is when Jesus is walking on water and Peter comes out to him. And we focus on Peter looks down and he starts falling. And we often, and then Jesus says, oh, you of little faith, like, why did you doubt? And we often say that in a very rebuking tone. But what you don't hear as much in Matthew 14 is Jesus also says, take heart. It's I. Do not be afraid. And it doesn't mm-hmm. say that he rebuked him. It says he just said that. So there's this mm-hmm. sense of that fear is not sinful. Now, we can have yeah. sinful responses to our fear, sure. but fear itself mm-hmm. actually invites the Lord's help. And there's this sense of, yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Right.
And that we can miss that.
Yeah. And it makes sense, right? Because we need that reminder when we're fearful and when we're anxious. I mean, I know that when I'm in a state of fear and anxiety, I mean, the things I know are just quick to rush out of my mind. And so we need that reminder of I'm with you. Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And I think what you're saying too gets at the point of you were mentioning like we don't have to be ruled by it, right? That's what we're talking about, where the fear and anxiety, so it's not a sinful thing, you were saying, to feel those things, which is really true. But we don't have to have that dictate everything we do and be ruled by it, which may lead to some sinful action. So that it's good and helpful to make that distinction. I really don't think that the emotions we're feeling are sinful. And the Bible doesn't tell us we can't feel this way, but it does talk a lot about, well, what do we do with that then? And how does that inform how we respond? So are we just reacting to things without taking into consideration where we're at and how that affects other people? Or are we responding? Are we being thoughtful in how we are using the data that scripture gives us, the data our emotions give us, our logical part of our brains give us, and responding in a helpful way? So yeah, I think that's helpful. Maybe we can shift just a little since we kind of have that framework. I can talk just briefly about what fear and anxiety can look like and feel like for people, yeah. just to help them be a little bit, again, aware of that. So another category to think through. So like we've said, it's, you know, it's a very common human emotion. So fear, we're responding to something that is a threat, a real or perceived imminent threat. And then anxiety is really our emotional response to a future threat. It's a lot more future oriented, and the two go hand in hand. And the virus is a good example of how that might play out. So we might be feeling very fearful of kind of the uncertainty and the everything that's coming along with the virus. And then as we're thinking about what that means for the future, that might lead us to feel anxious. And so that really makes sense if you're in that place right now. And I think it can just be helpful to understand what anxiety can look like and feel like for people. I'll just give a range of options. People experience it differently. They might have one or multiple of these things. But anxiety can really look like irritability, having a difficult time concentrating. So you kind of have racing thoughts. You might feel restless and on edge, a constant worry. So you're just kind of going over the same thing over and over again. It's like a loop playing in your mind. And even procrastination sometimes can be what anxiety looks like. And then it often comes along with physical symptoms as well. So you might feel like an increase in your heart rate, dizzy, nauseous, loss of appetite. You might have rapid or shallow breathing from your chest, shaking, like a tense feeling in your body, like your muscles are very tense, even difficulty sleeping. So there's just a whole range of experiences we can have with anxiety, both mentally and emotionally and physically. And those physical symptoms really do come from a place of our biological response being activated. And so it's good and helpful when that response activates in the right situation. And it's not helpful when it activates in the wrong situation.
Yeah. Thanks so much for fleshing that out for us. And yeah, I even love what you guys were talking about before. Just this topic biblically and how our response to anxiety can really be influenced by what we know about the Lord. And that can actually help us to not respond in an unhelpful way or in a way that would doubt who he is, but would trust mm-hmm. in him. Yeah. I wonder if we could even start to pivot in our conversation a little bit. We've been talking a lot about what these emotions are and how we can respond to them. I know right now in this season, probably a lot of you are feeling pretty anxious and that's manifesting itself in feeling pretty exhausted. I know we've been mm-hmm. talking with a lot of our coworkers and other staff who have been on Zoom calls every day for a month and a half, and they're worn out. And I'm sure that's the case for many of you, whether it's through work or class or whatever. So that kind of brings us to this topic of self-care. Mm-hmm. And self-care is something we talk about a lot in our society today. And oftentimes it, from the Christian world, it can be in some ways seen as, well, you're just being selfish, like thinking about yourself. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we recognize that if we're going to pour out, we need to have something in us to be filled up with to pour out. And so self-care can really help us with that. So Jillian, how can we think about self-care from a biblical perspective?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question because it is a bit of a buzzword. But I think it's still important, and we can think through it in the lens of the gospel. I like that each gospel account gives different examples of Jesus withdrawing, and they're for different reasons as you look through. But two that kind of stood out for me in Mark 6, so his disciples have just completed a lot of work, and Jesus looks at them and he says, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while, for many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat." And so in this situation, Jesus is looking out for his people, right? And he is recognizing that, you know what, I think we're exhausted. We need to withdraw. We need to rest. We need to take care of our baseline functioning of eating. Mm-hmm. And so that's one. And then in Luke 5, it talks about Jesus withdrawing to a desolate place to pray, even though the crowds were eager to hear him. So right before he withdraws, it says that the crowds are gathering, they're eager to hear him teach. So he has opportunity to keep working, and instead he withdraws to a desolate place. And so I think the point is, as we see Jesus kind of modeling that Sabbath spirit of resting, we also need to. So the point is that we are being refreshed and restored and recharged so that we can continue the work that the Lord has for us and to care for others. But we're not going to be able to do that if we're so burnt out and exhausted that we can't even take care of ourselves. So that's really, when I talk about self-care, that's my intention, and that's where I come from it. Like you were saying, not a totally selfish perspective or only inward focused thing, but meeting our needs so that we can then be ready to meet the needs of others. That makes sense.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So what are some practical ways to practice self-care during this time so that we can be healthy to do the work that God has given us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. I think specifically right now, so one thing that can be really, really important and beneficial is creating healthy routines that take care of yourself, especially your physical body. So these things are always important, but right now they're really important. Our physical health is directly tied to our mental health, so it will affect our mood and how we're feeling. So some things just like creating and maintaining a schedule for yourself. So you're at home now, you're not relying on the natural schedule you would probably have at school. And so you might need to do some work to just maintain and create a new schedule for yourself. So waking up at a certain time, going to bed at a certain time, Having chunks of your day divided up so that you are working when you need to be, eating when you need to be, exercising as you can to the best of your ability, getting outside. All of those things are really important for us, and we can't overlook or underestimate the importance of just taking care of some of those really basic needs. So if you can do that, that will significantly help care for your mental health. So I think that's one. I think also just it's good to be aware of our intake of news and social media. So it's understandable that in a situation like this, where there's a lot of unknown and uncertainty, we would want to have as much information as possible. But there is a point where that information can become unhelpful and can actually lead to increased anxiety. So it's important to really monitor how you're feeling before, during, and after you're maybe watching the news or reading the news or in using social media, and just make adjustments as you need to. So you might find that, scrolling on your phone, reading or looking at things for an hour before bed actually creates some anxiety for you, and then it's harder to fall asleep. So maybe you shift and you kind of get your information and get updated sometime in the morning, and then you don't look at it again until the next day. It can just be helpful to understand how those things are impacting you and adjust. Everyone's going to feel differently, but that's really important. There's a lot of studies that have shown that our use of social media, especially in adolescence, as their brain is continuing to develop, it really leads to increased anxiety and depression. And that's just under normal life circumstances. So that's just something that we want to be really aware of. I think another category to think about is just, we've talked about this a little bit before, but being aware of what your needs are. And so first it's the self-awareness of understanding how you're feeling, how you're doing internally, how are you processing this, and how is that affecting you? Kind of the wall example, right? So how do you know when you're running at a pace where you are approaching your wall? How do you know that you're getting there, and how do you slow yourself down? Another maybe way that I've heard that you can think about it is if you, if you're feeling like you're in a state of anxiousness or depression or just confusion, worry, stress, you can use this phrase. It's HALT. It's H-A-L-T. So ask yourself, are you hungry? Are you angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired? And those are just like four really key ways to evaluate that. That kind of goes back to that first one of caring for our physical needs. But just some things to consider so that you know when your needs aren't being met, and then how can you get those taken care of? Again, not in a purely selfish way, but just in a way that kind of refreshes and restores you, brings rest to you, regain a sense of calm in your body so that you can then continue on in working and caring for others. And I think one last thing just to be aware of as well is utilizing your support systems. So sometimes they're a little bit more informal. So friends and family, teammates, maybe coworkers if you have a job at home, just keeping in touch with the people that are most supportive and helpful to you, and doing that in whatever way is helpful. So whether that's texting or just having a regular phone call. But then also just remembering that there are formal ways of support as well. So if you're ever experiencing something that feels too persistent, too severe, and it's interfering with your ability to really do what you need to do on a daily basis, that's a good sign that you could really use some extra support, some formal support. And you might start with your doctor, a mental health counselor. Again, back to the caring for our mental health, just the way we would our physical health. So if you're noticing that there's a pressure point, there's a pain that is, impacting your ability to function in daily life, then you would want to seek out support to help alleviate some of that and manage that.
Yeah, I love all that you're saying. And I think one maybe through line that I'm seeing in this, and even our last episode, we were talking about just how to make the most of our coronavirus season. And in that episode, we talked about a lot of practical things that we could do to help other people and to grow in our faith and things like that. Yeah. And I think with both that and this, what we're seeing is just an increased need for us to just be intentional about the way we're going about things. Like if we're sitting back and we're just kind of existing and just like moving from one thing to the next with very little thought about why or how we're doing in that, that can just be really dangerous. So I love what we're saying in terms of, yeah, let's consider when I go on social media, that typically can be a pretty mindless activity, but I love how you're drawing out the importance of, yeah, let me evaluate how that's making me feel or how I'm interacting with that social media in my in my brain and how that's affecting my thoughts and all these kinds of things.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, you had mentioned loneliness, and on Instagram, Olivia19 asked, what are some healthy ways to cope with loneliness during this season? Because people living alone might be feeling lonely, but also you could live in a family full of people and still feel lonely. So how can we cope with loneliness during this season?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. I would think of it in those spheres that we were talking about. So maybe some of the like the relational parts and also the spiritual parts. So relationally, it can look like sometimes it is getting over that initial kind of feeling of wanting to withdraw and isolate. And again, that a normal feeling in this time when we're feeling overwhelmed and depressed, sometimes the way certain people respond to that is by withdrawing and isolating more. So being aware of that, and if that's your tendency, knowing your signs of when you're doing that, when you might be withdrawing and isolating, and then taking steps to kind of undo that. It doesn't have to be huge, but reaching out to a trusted friend that you know you can talk about how you're doing. So maybe that's a friend from home or college. Maybe it's a staff worker that you built a relationship with. Someone from your church, a parent, if you trust them and have a good relationship, a sibling, it is important to stay connected and kind of resist that urge to continue to self-isolate and withdraw. And I think it's about having those courageous conversations of with someone you trust, being able to explain to them, that you are feeling lonely. And my guess is that you might find that other people are too. It's easy to let ourselves think that we're the only one, and that really just keeps us isolated and spirals us. But instead, sharing that with someone that you trust can be really helpful. And then I think, like as we've been talking about, just looking through the scriptures, the Psalms in particular, of where people have felt abandoned or alone from the Lord, and understanding that it's okay to be honest with those feelings, right? That pain, that protest, but then also looking at ways of eventual praise one day. It doesn't mean that you have to feel that you need to praise in that moment, but that there is hope, that there are promises that we can look to in the future.
Yeah, thanks. May Reg from Instagram also wanted to know, what advice do you have for people who can't afford therapy but still need it?
Mm-hmm. It's a really good question. I, again, I'd encourage them to talk to someone they trust, to kind of have a partner in figuring out what steps they can take. So sometimes there are local organizations and agencies that will help cover the cost of therapy. Sometimes certain agencies or counselors have what they call like a sliding scale fee, where they'll adjust their price based on your income and what you can afford. Sarah, you had mentioned, we were talking a little earlier, like even potentially churches might have some fund that is available to help people cover that. I know that sometimes again, this depends a bit on insurance and your parents. But sometimes there are insurance plans that offer a certain number of sessions free. And so there are options. It does take some work to look into. And so that's why I would encourage you to do that work, but maybe do it with a friend or someone that you trust where you don't feel that you're taking that burden on alone. Maybe they can help make some calls to find out information and then give that information to you, and you can decide what you want to do with it. Just partnering with someone can be really helpful.
Yeah, I know even as students, most of your campuses, if not all of them, do have some level of counseling too, even on campus, that I know mm-hmm. even while schools are closed down, they're still functioning. And, you know, not having to pay extra for it is the best. And so even if it's just a place to start, that can mm-hmm. that can even really help and be available.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. Checking in with your campus mental health center, counseling center, and seeing what's still available. And it's just, it's really helpful. I know that asking for help in general is hard. And then there's sometimes additional stigma that comes along when we're asking for help with our mental health. But, you know, we are always going to encounter times in our lives that cause us stress. And so the point of getting any sort of help is not to make those feelings go away and so that you never feel anxious or feel fearful or depressed or lonely again, because we certainly will have times where those feelings creep in. But it's really about having a safe space where you can, you know, process through where you're at and then learn ways to manage when those feelings do arise. So learning coping skills, learning the people you can count on to help you navigate and walk through. And so I just would really encourage people that if you're feeling in a place where, you know, the weight of things are becoming too much, to reach out for help. There are many people who care about you and love you and want to come alongside with you.
Yeah. Thanks so much for sharing all these things with us, Jillian, and for answering those questions. And thank you guys for sending them in and asking them. We really hope that through this podcast, you guys were able to probably more than anything else, just feel the stigma lifted a little bit in having these types of conversations. And yeah, I'd really echo, yeah, find a friend, talk to your staff worker about it if you're a student. Talk with other church members or your family about these things. There are probably other people in your life that are struggling with this same stuff more than you realize. And so even you being willing to come forward and start that conversation could give an opportunity for someone else to share about something that they've been struggling with. No doubt in this season, there are lots of people who are anxious, lots of people who are lonely. And we're all experiencing this quarantine coronavirus stuff together. So this is an especially good time to start having these conversations. We'll have lots of more resources in the show notes and the things we've discussed in this podcast for you to access. And we hope that you will think about these things, talk about them, and access some of those resources as well. So thanks, Jillian, for joining us. And we'll talk to all of you guys next time. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Disciple Makers podcast. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Jillian about mental health and that it will serve you as you consider your own mental health and how to encourage others. As always, we have resources for you in the show notes, so check out those to explore more about this topic. Thanks so much to those of you who asked questions. We really appreciated your contributions to our discussion. And as always, you guys can stay tuned to our Instagram and Facebook stories or email us at podcast@dm.org to join in as well. Remember that if you are a Disciple Maker student who would like to be trained as a laborer in Christ Harvest Fields this summer, we invite you to sign up for the Summer Discipleship Challenge. You can do so at dm.org/summer, where you can find more details about the course as well. Thanks so much again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on the Disciple Makers podcast.